Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, August 29, 2019. The top U.S. diplomat in South Sudan says the parties to the revitalized peace agreement should work together.
Even in this pre-transition period, for instance, there's not a unity government yet. We've been pressuring and pressing and asking them to consider trying to take on governmental challenges and working together. So government and opposition working together on things.
And South Sudanese holdout rebel groups meet in The Hague to plan for change.
Our purpose of the meeting today is to unite all of the opposition groups that are fighting to bring change. More importantly, to forge a united political, diplomatic and military front to affect change in our country.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United States ambassador to South Sudan says his country, the United Kingdom and Norway will continue to pressure the warring parties to implement the revitalized peace agreement in South Sudan, adding the international community is expecting the formation of a transitional government of national unity by the November deadline. Manyang David Mayar reports for VOA from Bor.
In speaking in Jonglei State capital of Bor yesterday, U.S. Ambassador to South Sudan Tom Hosek said the international community have observed that some parties to the peace deal are cooperating.
One of the best things about the peace agreement so far has been the ceasefire that has been holding pretty much for about a year now. That gives us the breathing room to really start tackling some of these other problems. Even in this pre-transition period, for instance, there's not a unity government yet. We've been pressuring and pressing and asking them to consider trying to take on governmental challenges and working together. So government and opposition working together on things.
As an example of the government's cooperation with opposition parties on certain matters, Hosek said South Sudan has included the names of several opposition members as part of its delegation heading to the United Nations General Assembly in New York later in September.
They didn't have to do that because it's not a unity government yet, but it's a very good sign that they are interested in working to govern together. Other things we're really pushing on is to have more of that cooperation, collaboration right now, rather than competition. And that could be symbolized by Dr. Riek and President Salva Kiir meeting together, but also keeping the other parties very actively involved as well.
South Sudan's warring parties signed a revitalized peace agreement in September 2018 following a fresh wave of fighting that erupted in July 2016 in the capital. Under the signed peace deal, a unity government was supposed to be formed in May, but the parties agreed to expand the transitional period by another 6 months due to delays in security arrangements and the continuing dispute over the number of states. Ambassador Hosek says the U.S. government want to see the November deadline met.
We're really encouraging all sides, all the parties to the agreement to stick to that, to get this new government going. It doesn't mean that all the problems will be fixed by then, unfortunately. There's still a lot of work that new government will have to continue to do throughout the transition period and beyond.
Hosek traveled to Bor this week to assess the progress of U.S.-supported humanitarian programs in Jonglei State, including the handover of 5 fiber boats to a fisheries group in Bor. For VOA News, I am Manyang David Mayar in Bor.
From Bor, we move to The Hague, where South Sudanese rebel leaders who are not signatories to the September 2018 peace deal are meeting in The Hague to unite their ranks. Kwaja Lasso, spokesperson for the South Sudan Democratic Alliance, says the leaders of the National Salvation Front, South Sudan United Front, and the former detainees are discussing how to form one group to fight the government of South Sudan.
The leaders who have addressed the meeting is General Thomas Cirillo, the chairman of South Sudan National Democratic Alliance. It's an umbrella organization that covers NAS, SSNMC, NDM, and UDRA. Also, the real SPLM, led by Comrade Baganamoum, addressed the opening session of the conference, followed an address by General Malone, the Chairman and Commander-in-Chief of SSUF.
And the names you're giving me here are names of people who have decided to sit on the fence while everybody's in Juba trying to implement. What is this meeting all about?
Our purpose of the meeting today is to unite all of the opposition groups that are fighting to bring change. Our main task is to launching the new vision of hope and transformation in South Sudan, which is the theme of our conference, first and foremost. And more importantly, to forge a united political, diplomatic and military front to affect change in our country.
You are talking about political, diplomatic and military change. I'm using your words here. Could you be more elaborate? Can you tell us what this means?
As we progress, we will give you more detail in our communique. However, I would just wanted to let you know that this the purpose by launching this new vision of hope.
You said General Thomas Cirillo spoke, General Paul Malong, and Paganamoum spoke during the opening sessions. Could you tell us some of the issues they addressed in their speech?
Their speech is very clear, centered in the unity of all the opposition that against or did not sign the peace agreement. Knowingly, the peace agreement is very flawed and uninclusive. It doesn't represent the aspiration of the people of the country. Otherwise, we all know for a fact that our people are still in the refugee camps outside the country as well as refugee within the country. So the message from all the three leaders unified front to bring change in our country.
Kwajala, so I've spoken with you on several occasions, and all I could hear is the groups that did not sign the revitalized peace agreement are talking about change. How can you bring change when you are not signing a document that is supposed to bring change?
If the document is genuinely addressed the root causes of the crisis, we'll be more than happy to be part of it. However, the peace agreement that was signed is very flawed, not to mention the fact that it's failed to address the core issue of the conflict in our country.
What are the core issues?
Giving the people of the country that they believe or they fight for years, number one. Giving the opportunity for devaluation of power to the people. System of governance has to be addressed. All these items have failed miserably in that document. The most important item as well, the security arrangement in our country, the security force need to be reformed from top to bottom.
If you're not going to be part of the current peace agreement, how are you going to bring change?
Well, there's so many ways and opportunities ahead of us to bring change in our country.
What are these opportunities? I mean, are you saying you want to continue fighting, or what is it?
Well, when you say fighting, there's so many ways of fighting. Fighting peacefully.
How can you fight peacefully? A fight is a fight.
One example, what had happened in the northern part of our country, there was a peaceful revolution that have taken place. That's one example.
If I look at the list of the leaders meeting in Hague, it's only Paganamoum who is not having a group that is armed. Nas is armed. Malong is armed. What are you trying to do? Unite the team together and fight peacefully?
As I've said, the better way of having all of us as opposition in the same unified front so we can advance our cause.
But you are saying that there are many ways of effecting change. And one of it is you said you want to effect change using peaceful means. General Thomas Cirillo is armed. He's
in a real sense of the world. We always want to think to be peaceful. However, we will not discount that the fact that situation may be otherwise.
And for how long is this meeting running?
The meeting will run for at least 2 or 3 days, and then we'll come out with a strong communique, the message for our people.
And how many people are attending the meeting? Can you give us a rough figure of the people here, apart from the leaders?
Well, the leaders are represented by members. So far we have about 15. We're expecting more members to come.
That's Kwajala, so spokesperson for the South Sudan Democratic Alliance. He was speaking with me earlier today from The Hague in Netherlands at the venue of a meeting between three rebel groups. Army generals with both the government and armed opposition warn that political instability will continue in South Sudan if security reforms are not implemented. The top military officials say many security reforms have yet to be implemented, even though army commanders have undergone fresh training. Onen Walter Solomon has more for VOA from Juba.
Speaking at the start of a three-day meeting in Juba on security reforms organized by the Strategic Defense and Security Review Board, Lieutenant General Johnson Juma Okot of the South Sudan's People's Defense Force says the Constitution and the SPLA Act spell out how the government and the army should be run, but the laws are not being implemented.
The question one would ask is, has the leadership be compatible enough to implement those legal frameworks that govern security of this country? Do you have compatible institutional capacities that enable us to implement all these challenges in the security sector of this country?
Okot says South Sudan has too many borrowed experiences of experts from various countries, making it difficult to implement suggested security sector reforms. He says regular security forces should do more to address insecurity starting in Juba.
Are we unified in our operations? Code of conduct, are we doing it? In this small town in Juba here, it's very chaotic. And this is a reality. I don't think we can deny to tell facts to ourselves. If we want to deliver services to the people of this country that have lived under this situation for so long, the disasters are many. Maybe the man-made is more than the natural.
General Guy Chatim Poch represents the former detainees in the Strategic Defense and Security Review Board. He says addressing the security situation in South Sudan does not require external help.
This thing doesn't need foreign aid, because these crimes are committed by individuals within ourselves. All the threats to ourselves. We decided to work outside of our policies developed by ourselves.
Major General Nyagwal Ajak Deng, who represents the SPLMIO in the Strategic Defense and Security Review Board, says the SPLA white paper should be sent to Parliament for review so other issues can be incorporated into it. Ajak notes that all army generals have bodyguards chosen from their tribes because they mistrust soldiers from other tribes.
But a real government, a real system, you get your bodyguards from your command, from any tribe, from any that identify the good people with the good conduct. You don't need to see them as your relative or your whatever. We still have fear.
South Sudanese lawmakers passed March 2011 resolution shortly before the country declared its independence to develop a comprehensive national security strategy for the new state by the end of 2012, which was included in Article 160 of the Transitional Constitution of 2011. It provides the establishment of a National Security Council and a security committees at the state and county levels. For VOA News, I am Onen Walter Solo in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a top U.S. official says many South Sudanese young men and women are in the dark when it comes to HIV and AIDS awareness. Find out why when we come back after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
could you be friends with someone who broke your trust?
I cannot, because if I trust him again and again or her, she will keep on disappointing me. So I better keep myself away from wrong people and I start associating with the right people.
I can be friend to him because God said you don't hate others, right? Even though he broke my trust.
I can be because I'm not the kind of person who usually hold grudges against people. So if my friends still want me to be friends with him, we can still be friends, but not the best friend.
Yes, you can be friends, but the trust won't be there because, you know, the next time you tell him something, there is a possibility of him doing it again.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011 and we'll get back to you. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. U.S. top diplomat in South Sudan says many young South Sudanese are at risk of contracting HIV/AIDS because of little knowledge about how the disease is spread. U.S. Ambassador to South Sudan Tom Hushek told leaders from various parts of South Sudan meeting in Juba this week to play a key role in informing their communities about HIV and AIDS. Ding Magot reports for VOA from Juba.
Hushek made the remarks during a workshop on Tuesday organized by the South Sudan AIDS Commission, the UN Joint Program on AIDS, and the U.S. President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, or PEPFAR. Mayors from towns across the country were encouraged to launch awareness campaigns about HIV and AIDS in their communities. Ambassador Hushek says the fact is many young South Sudanese do not know their HIV status is because of stigma and discrimination.
And so these are playing a very, very important role. So when you think about how we go about treating this epidemic, of course there's medicines and there's proper procedures, but also a big ingredient of how this epidemic gets controlled has to do with your leadership.
According to the South Sudan HIV and AIDS Commission, nearly 200,000 people are living with HIV and AIDS in the country, but only 25% of the population know their status. Only 9.8% of women aged 15 to 24 were able to identify ways of preventing the sexual transmission of HIV in 2018. Last year, 19,000 people were newly infected with HIV in South Sudan, according to UNAIDS. Officials say young people constitute the highest numbers of new infections in the country. Esterina Novella Nyilok heads the South Sudan HIV and AIDS Commission.
The majority, they don't know their status, whether positive or negative. They could be also transmitting the disease unknowingly. Those on treatment, receiving the treatment, 16%. And when we looked at the children, it's only 9%.
Mary Otieno, the country representative for the United Nations Population Fund, or UNFPA, said last week while addressing youth on HIV and AIDS that most young people do not know how to prevent the spread of HIV and AIDS because they have no access to information on the disease.
There is lack of access to youth-friendly health services, including for sexual and reproductive health, that leads to high rates of HIV, teenage pregnancies, and maternal mortality as young girls die from pregnancies for which their immature bodies are not yet ready.
Sophia Mkasa, the country director of the UNAIDS, says the United Nations has set an ambitious target for 2020.
Want an inclusive epidemic, leaving nobody behind. If we are going to end HIV by 2030, or if we are going to move closer to the targets of the political declaration of 2020, where we said 90% of everybody living with HIV should know their status.
30-year-old Levi Juma Morris, who works for VSS Security in Juba as a radio operator, says he was last tested for HIV in 2010 and sees no need to be tested again.
Because I'm having my wife and I'm not moving anyhow, I have 3 kids. That's why I've not been going for tested. And the last time when my wife was get pregnant, she went, because there the process you have to go through the testing, then I know my status through her. Yeah, that's why I've not been there for a long time.
21-year-old Mary Nirol, a student at Juba Parent School, says even though she once tested for HIV, she knows nothing about the disease.
It's like the teachers can just explain to us, and that's the small knowledge that I have. It's like they take us for tests. We should make some HIV tests, so we're taken to there's a clinic, something like 15 girls, and then one was found with HIV positive. And then the rest of us were negative. So when we asked the teacher what was the important, why this test is important for us, it's like it is for your safety.
The South Sudan government and UNAIDS are working towards a 90-90-90 target. That is, by 2020, 90% of people living with HIV will know their HIV status. 90% of people who know their HIV positive status will be accessing treatment. And 90% of people on treatment will have suppressed viral loads. The South Sudan HIV and AIDS Commission says today only 16% of people living with HIV in the country are on treatment. For VOA News, I am Ding Makot in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Uganda, where a new report by the International Refugee Rights Initiative reveals a cocktail of frustration, unemployment, post-traumatic stress, and alcohol abuse among refugee communities in northern Uganda. Uganda hosts around 1.3 million refugees. 833,000 of these are from South Sudan. Halima Athumani reports from Kampala.
Amol Dokas has lived as a refugee in Uganda since early 2014 after running away from armed conflict in South Sudan. With Uganda's free land policy for refugees on arrival, Amol got her 7.6 meters by 9.1 meter share of land in the Nyumanzi settlement, Adjumani district. She says the land is not sufficient, however, especially for those who want to grow crops for food. Like most refugees, in order to survive, she had to enter an agreement with a member of the host community. The deal allows her to grow crops on their land on the condition that she pays some money at year end. Doka says conflict arose when a member of the host community declined to respect the agreement.
But when these crops do well, so the owner of that land actually, or an unknown person will just come, they'll take them. So without you knowing, and you are staying in the settlement, we share the boreholes with the host community. These boreholes also, they are not enough. Sometimes the women and the children can just collide at the water point and just like kind of bring in conflict.
Land wrangling between South Sudan refugees and host communities are just one of many conflicts going on in refugee settlements in Uganda. Among other challenges are recruitment of refugees as combatants, unemployment, post-traumatic stress, and alcohol abuse. This was revealed in a report released Wednesday by the International Refugee Rights Initiative, describing its finding as a cocktail of frustrations in which refugees are engulfed. Thess Van La, the lead researcher for the International Refugee Rights Initiative, points out that another issue of concern is the presence in refugee settlements of individuals involved in the South Sudanese conflict.
Our research has confirmed that several parties to the conflict have attempted to recruit refugees as combatants, although it does remain difficult to establish the full scope of this practice and to what extent that has continued since the signing of a peace agreement in 2018. But members of the warring parties have visited the refugee settlements, sometimes to reunite with their families that are staying there, but also at times to target political opponents.
Uganda is home to 1.3 million refugees, 833,000 of whom are from South Sudan, living in settlements in northern Uganda. In the three districts of Adjumani, Lamu and Arua, which has the largest refugee population, the number of refugees exceeds the number of Ugandan citizens. This has escalated conflict in the settlements. In order to deter some of these conflicts, the Ugandan government and the UN Refugee Agency deliberately have separated communities in some settlements to avoid incidents. Ndahiro Innocent, the government refugee integration and legal officer, reveals to VOA that the government recently got partial funding from a World Bank grant worth $336 million that will be used to resolve land wrangles between host communities and refugees. On refugee recruitment, Ndahiro says they have heard of reports of husbands involved in the conflict visiting their wives in Uganda.
It's true we've picked information that their husbands, not that they are armed, but they just sneak in through Polar's borders to check on their families. And of course, the communities keep this information with them. So by the time we get to pick this information, you cannot easily get these people. So what we are doing is to, of course, increase security vigilance.
The report is urging the Ugandan government, UNHCR, and the international community to increase funding for refugees in Uganda in an effort to build harmony and peace among the different communities. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
Dozens of South Sudanese students have been awarded scholarships to study in Turkey this year. Some of the students say the Turkish government has helped their parents who don't earn enough money to pay university fees. Viola Elias has more for VOA from Juba.
A smiling 21-year-old Habil Peter Umar looks excited as he intermingles with fellow South Sudanese students at the Turkish embassy who will also be attending universities in Turkey. Habil and 28 other South Sudanese will travel to Turkey next week to attend university for 5 years. Habil says, after sitting for secondary school certificate examination at Bazinga Academy in former Western Equatorial State in 2016, he worked as a teacher and has been applying for scholarship overseas to receive a higher education since his parents cannot afford to pay tuition fees.
I'm very happy with the scholarship because one of the most important things, it's a full-funded scholarship. So I'm very happy that the scholarship make me become instrumental in alleviating the suffering of my community.
Habil will study electrical engineering at the Turkish Kocaeli University. Ashan Garang won a scholarship to study business administration in Turkey. Garang says she hopes to become a successful businesswoman when she returns to South Sudan. She says while she found it fairly easy to find and apply for scholarship online, she is disappointed to see that more women did not win scholarship.
The girls are very few, as there are only 4 girls and the boys are many. Because, you know, our country boys are more open to each other and telling themselves that the scholarship here, let's go on and apply together. And they do. But the girls, I don't know, they have this mean character in them. They don't help each other.
South Sudan Higher Education Minister Uyen Oral says even though several countries offer scholarships to South Sudanese students, most needy students do not have access to online scholarship opportunities. He praised the Turkish government for accepting hard copy application forms from foreigners.
Not most of the South Sudanese are getting access to internet for them to apply it. In that particular MOU, we put it clear that if the quota of the South Sudanese scholarships could be sent like any other world, like what we are doing with the Moroccan, what we are doing with Chinese, what we are doing with Japanese, so that they are able to compete themselves.
Tugrul Biltakin, the Turkish ambassador to South Sudan, says apart from offering scholarship opportunities, Turkish companies operating in South Sudan are also providing jobs to more than 2,000 South Sudanese nationals. Biltakin encouraged South Sudanese heading to Turkey to take the advantage of the opportunities around them.
You will be surprised. And then you get your knowledge from there and please bring it here. And then the embassy will keep on helping you for finding jobs in the future, as well as the alumni organization over here. The largest construction company in South Sudan is a Turkish construction company. And more than 2,000 South Sudanese are working over there.
Ambassador Biltakin says Turkey is in the process of constructing 2 international schools in South Sudan, one in Juba and another in Amadi State. Turkey began offering scholarships to South Sudanese students in 2011, shortly after the country gained its independence. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
That's our show for this Thursday. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for inviting us into your homes and vehicles. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.